our guest, and he's here with us each and every month. You read him in the daily newspaper, now in the Sunday edition with the biggest circulation. I'm glad more people are being exposed to the wisdom of David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management. Today, we have a very timely conversation regarding the IRS taxes and lack of limitation and accountability on government officials and employees. David, welcome to the Shilling Show. What a timely subject. And I'll tell you, I think people have almost given up on this. Like the president is not responding affirmatively, and they're thinking, well, I guess it's just the world that we live in today. I'm sorry. There we go.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It certainly is enough to make you cynical if you aren't already cynical. And I, even as cynical as I am, sometimes they still surprise me.
Well, if we look at that and we see that a bunch of people are frustrated and it looks like the government is totally out of control and that there is no accountability and that there's really nobody standing up strongly and saying this is an outrage and I demand something be done. I mean, how do we address this to those people who are listening right now saying, I'm just going to go listen to some music because this is a worthless pursuit?
Yeah, I mean, the question is, do you petition your government and beg them to do the right thing? Is that the model that we really want to have?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there some right here that has been violated and it's an inalienable right, it's a human right, it's a right of the people, and not just largesse that the government is willing to acquiesce and actually tell us what's going on?
Well,
I think that's an important distinction because everything that we have in government, we think that government has given us rights and government has done this. And we're looking for a good government which will be benevolent, open, and honest. And the Obama administration, I think it's probably one of the most open administrations that we have ever had. And if it's as bad as this when it's trying to be open, how bad would it be if they were actually trying to hide secrets from us?
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. I never thought of it like that, but it is concerning to a lot of people. You had a number of pieces, and I would encourage people to visit David online at MurataOnMoney.com because there's some great pieces there on this topic. There was one that had to do with what I would call one of the forgotten amendments, the Ninth Amendment. We hear a lot about the Tenth Amendment these days, not so much about the Ninth Amendment. And you have actually proposed a Ninth Amendment right to a public accounting of government.
Yeah, my amendment goes something like this. If you were to, the Ninth Amendment is our unenumerated rights, meaning mm-hmm. that we have unenumerated rights, which no power of government can overcome because they're natural rights. And I would propose the Ninth Amendment right on accountability, something like this, that citizens have the right to a public accounting by government officials of their public service. So it goes further than the Freedom of Information Act, because mm-hmm. the Freedom of Information Act is a right that government has imposed upon themselves, not a natural right, not a right of the people. And the Freedom of Information Act has, I don't know, 12 different exemptions that that organizations can or that government agencies can use to not comply with the right. And administrations can decide how they want to implement it. And it's been changed, I think, 7 or 8 times since its enactment, meaning it's a right which is malleable and can be put into place, and various other acts like the National Security Acts can also have Freedom of Information Act exemptions written into them as well. And so, but a Ninth Amendment unenumerated right would then have the force of law, and it would be a natural right of the people rather than a right given to them by the government.
This is a fascinating topic. I have been on the receiving end of Freedom of Information Act interference, and I just want to give a couple of examples. There was a recently departed supervisor from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors who was purported to have been misusing a government, i.e. taxpayer-issued laptop. And I said I'd like to see, you know, contents that were seized from that laptop that were used in the criminal trial that was now concluded. Nope. We're not compelled to give that information to you. This is coming from the Albemarle County Police Department. I'm very disappointed in them. No, we're not giving it to you. We have it, but we choose not to give it to you under such and such FOIA exemption. We could, but we won't. We had another former employee at the city of Charlottesville who used to run the communications department over there, who, when I made a FOIA request, was caught red-handed destroying emails. And instead of being terminated immediately, he did offer his resignation and was immediately hired back at a $55,000 per year and full-time equivalent position for another 9 or 10 months. And this is the sort of shenanigans that go on locally when you can have a better handle on it. To think about what's going on nationally is absolutely frightening.
Yeah, and the Freedom of Information Act doesn't work. I looked up the IRS has denied, just last year in 2012, the IRS denied 6,118 Freedom of Information requests. And they have some requests that have not been replied to in over 500 days. That's over a year and a half.
Well, that's obviously in violation of the law. There is a time limit on replies.
It is.
Yet we see this. And so how do you or I fight the government? They have unlimited resources that is provided to them by us.
Yeah, and the Freedom of Information Act, since it's not working, I think a constitutional amendment would actually be a valuable thing. We deserve an open accounting of our government. We deserve to know what goes on. If all public agents were held to an accounting, then we wouldn't have to wonder where the billions of dollars of TARP money went. We wouldn't have to demand that the Federal Reserve be audited. It would be ours by constitutional right. And I think that's a positive step, and it's a positive step for freedom. And yes, the courts then would decide, not government officials. There would be a check on government officials rather than them just saying, oh, it's FOIA exemption 12B mm-hmm. or 18C or whatever of all the exemptions that they've written in for themselves into the law. It would now be a constitutional right, and some federal laws providing for exemptions would be held to be unconstitutional by the courts, and we'd actually have a check and balance on our system, which is the genius of the American system, is that the courts actually do uphold the people's rights for the most part.
Have you heard anybody discussing this on a national level? It's a very unique idea. I had not heard of it, but is there anybody who's kicking this sort of thing around?
No, it was actually in some discussions with my son where he was talking about, rather than complaining, what's the positive outcome? Mm-hmm. How could we actually enforce this? And I said, well, the thing I get the most excited about is actually proposing some of the unenumerated rights be enumerated, because these would put in a positive format some of the freedoms that I think the American people deserve and have by right, but are being trampled on. So this show right here is the first time I've ever proposed one in its format, and I think they're positive and they should be done, and we could easily get enough oomph behind them to actually propose them and make them an issue.
Well, I think this is the sort of thing that would be hard for somebody to come out against, although I'm sure there are advocates of big government who would look at this and pick it apart and find some reason. I mean, looking at the other side of it, can you see any legitimate reason why someone would be against this?
I can, but it's the same reason why people are against the First Amendment. The First Amendment gives us freedom of speech, but the courts have decided where the limits of freedom of speech mm-hmm. are. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. So I think that this stated in the positive, I think the courts would come back and the courts would say, well, there are some issues for national security and there's some issues for personal privacy. So my personal records of employment may, you know, my social security number mm-hmm. of working for the government may be a protected part of that you can't ask for. But I think the courts would decide it rather than having the government officials decide it at their whim. And I think that's a more positive way of having it decided.
Yeah, I think we're in a lot of trouble when the government is its own watchdog. I think we could demonstrate that's problematic over and over again. Our guest is David Morata. 977-1070 is the phone number. We'd love to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree. Challenges, questions, comments, they're all welcome here. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about another amendment. That would be the Fifth Amendment and government officials, the rights against self-incrimination. We've seen that play out with Lois Lerner most recently. That's on The Shilling Show when we return after news and weather. Stay with us. 977-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. Our guest is David Morata, the president of Morata Wealth Management. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. We welcome your calls. We're talking today about the IRS, taxes, limitations on government, and also we'll be talking about the Fifth Amendment. We spoke about the Ninth Amendment in the previous segment. So we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to the phones now because he's been waiting very patiently through the break and say hello to Greg. Hi, Greg. Welcome to The Shilling Show.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're doing well, thank you.
I'd like to say something, about letting things be decided in the Supreme Court. I think the Supreme Court has way too much power, and the fact that it goes there and then they use case law, we've had an evolution away from the Constitution, in my opinion, especially with Obamacare passing. So I'd like to see, this is why state elections are so important, I'd like to see nullification, states using more power in nullification. Of course, we had fought a civil war over that, but we could still use state power for nullification based on the Kentucky Virginia resolutions. And, you know, that's why the state election is so important. And then I'd like to ask you about the NSA. You know, I think it's important to have national security, but the fact that they're using that as a segue to spy on the American people is an abomination. And I think that that needs to be tightened up. I think it's okay to chase them when they're trying to terrorists call in Yemen or something like that, but to spy on every American is out of line, and that's against their natural rights. And I'm just going to sign off and see what David has to say about all that.
Yeah, Greg, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, Greg brings up a number of interesting points. I'm going to start with just one, and that is the idea that the NSA can listen in on all of our conversations. And what's interesting about that is how much metadata they can get from just the place that you're calling and where you're calling and who you're calling and who you're talking to. Some of the metadata would be very simple, but some of the metadata would be very complex, and yet they'd be able to data mine it and figure it out. I remember a story about Target who sent out a flyer to a woman who they thought was pregnant because of the purchasing habits that she had at Target. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, from purchasing various things, that they can determine whether or not someone is pregnant. Unfortunately, it happened to be an underage teenage girl that they sent it to, and her father got really upset and went back to Target and said, "How can you send pregnancy stuff to my underage daughter?" Mm. And they said, "You know, we're sorry, we're just doing this for marketing." It turns out his daughter was pregnant. And what's funny is that Target knew it from metadata before the father did. So it's amazing how much you can derive from metadata. You know, you're calling a suicide hotline from the San Francisco Golden mm-hmm. Gate Bridge. I wonder what the conversation was about, you know, or you're calling a phone sex hotline at 2 a.m. I mm-hmm. wonder what that conversation mm-hmm. was about. And you can get a lot from the conversations. But what is worse is some of the conversations are actually being stored. And if they get a warrant because you do something in the future, they can go back 10 or 20 years and listen in on all of your conversations, getting a retroactive wiretap. And that's the real danger to this whole thing, is that everything you say can and will be used against mm-hmm. you, even if you thought it was a private conversation. One of the Ninth Amendment unenumerated rights I believe that people have is privacy of correspondence.
Mm.
And other constitutions in other countries actually have a line item that give their citizens the right to privacy of correspondence, and we don't. And so that's yet another unenumerated right that we probably ought to have and don't. Now, if you give it to United States citizens, that is very different than giving it to non-citizens. Mm-hmm. But I think citizens have a right to the privacy of correspondence within all of the means of technology, even if you can listen in on it.
I want to step back for a second about natural law and the concept of atheists and natural law. So if you don't believe that there is a God and a creator who gives us unalienable rights, is natural law apply? I mean, we're quickly seemingly becoming a godless nation. At least one political party has stated that, and who knows what the majority of Americans think these days. But can you observe natural law as an atheist?
Yeah, it's interesting. Certainly the natural rights, I think if you are a person of faith, have to fall upon our creator. If you're not a person of faith, then you have to found them on something else. And you can try to found them that way. I know that libertarians try to found it on simply that you own yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start with that premise that you own yourself, then you own the product of your labor, which then gives you property rights. And if you own the product of who you're willing to confide in, your own privacy, that you cover your body or you only tell certain people certain things, then you begin to have a right to privacy that way, because you choose to do things with yourself that you don't want other people to necessarily know about. So I think you can build it up that way. But I think for anyone who is a person of faith, it will naturally go to, well, who created you? And if you own yourself, then if you are owned by your creator, then it has to fall back upon God as well.
Let's go to the phones. There's a line open for you at 977-1070, and say hello to Charles. Charles, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Murata.
Hi, Ralph. Thank you so much. And hi David. A couple of comments. One regarding the privacy issues you mentioned other countries. I would recommend very highly you seek out the movie. It's in German, but the English translation is The Lives of Others. It's made in German language with subtitles. It's been out for several years. It's still floating around. And it's a wonderfully crafted film showing how the Stasi operated in East Germany and focusing on one particular agent who was so dedicated to the cause, monitoring the conversations of a sort of a cell of novelist activists. It has a very interesting ending, but it just puts into grim reality when you take this listening and layer upon it a certain amount of voyeurism, that people may actually find some of these conversations entertaining if they look at the content. Number two, we don't want to forget about our smart meters and weave them into the story. I think, Rob, we had a chance to see it, but I did have access to one source which actually gave a typical smart meter readout fingerprint, and they could identify what particular type of appliance was being used at what particular time of the day and how often. So if you link personal activity broadcast by the smart meter of your internal actions at home, all dealing with electricity and all the things that can be deduced from that as much as they can deduce from phone numbers and lengths of conversations, layer that upon the NSA, and then you have another layer of very interesting spy upon me stories. Okay, enough of rants, but anyway, the film is terrific. I really wish somebody would have a chance to review it and comment on it. Thank you.
Charles, thanks so much for the call. Nice to hear from you. Let's get a response from David Morata.
Yeah, Charles, I have seen The Lives of Others, and I'll have to say I almost never like subtitled films, and that was an incredible film, and we still talk about it in our family, just because it really gives you a picture into the voyeurism of spying on others. And you're right, the ending is amazing. So for people who don't like subtitled films, I don't either, and I loved that film. It was a great film to watch.
Let's talk for a moment before the break, David, about the so-called right to privacy, because there are many people who said, well, we have a right to privacy that kind of emanates from unreasonable search and seizure. And there are other people, including members of the Supreme Court, who said there is no right to privacy in America. And I think that's a very important question. Do we have a right to expect privacy?
Yeah, and it's a good debate to have. The privacy issues that are in other countries are specific privacies, like the privacy of correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we do have a right to a privacy of correspondence. That given the distances today, technology shouldn't abrogate my right to be able to tell some people some things and not tell those to other things. And is it an absolute right? No, more than an absolute right of freedom. I think there are probably times at which imminent threat might make it worthwhile to abrogate that right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that on the whole, it should be given to people. And what happens now is that you say, well, if you use any technology of any company, then you're giving up all of your rights to privacy, and they're all listed that way. And for people who are rich enough, they can still lead private lives. They can have private email servers. They can mm-hmm. have heavy encryption systems. And while those encryption systems exist and are possible, I think the average person who doesn't understand those and can't afford them and can't take the time to implement them still deserves a right to privacy. And I think that should be something that we should have as a natural right, and it should be written into our Constitution as one of the unenumerated rights.
977-1070 is the phone number. If you have a comment or question for David Morata, we'd love to hear from you. Our final segment with David coming up right after this. You can get in line right now at 977-1070. Luke is standing by, and the Shilling Show returns momentarily. 977-1070, the phone number here on the Shilling Show. Our final segment with David Morata. We're talking about the government, the IRS, taxes, government limitations or lack thereof. And Chuck is with us. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Morata. Go right ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I have a question. In the last segment, you were saying the Supreme Court has said there's no right to privacy?
There have been members of the Supreme Court who have held that position.
So does that affect Roe v. Wade at all?
Well, I don't think
Roe v. Wade is based on the right to privacy, is it not?
Well, it probably should affect it. I'm not sure that was the majority opinion, but I have seen that espoused. In fact, I believe Clarence Thomas was one of them, but I'd have to let somebody do some quick web research on that. But it certainly, I think, would definitely affect Roe v. Wade, which I think was a flawed decision in the first place.
Yeah, that's what it's actually famous for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, more so than what it actually did, almost.
Chuck, you're correct. Roe v. Wade was based on inventing a right to privacy that extended to an unborn child. And that was part of the controversy of the decision. It was controversial on a number of issues. One, is there a right to privacy? And justices are split on that. And then second, if there's a right to privacy, does that extend to being able to abort an unborn fetus? And or is there personhood there that is actually better protected than your right to privacy? All those get together. I think there probably is a right to privacy, but I think I would somehow limit it to what are you allowed to keep private, which isn't said when you just say the right to privacy. I think you should be allowed to keep your nakedness private. So mm-hmm. I think the TSA scanners violate your right to privacy. And I think you should be able to keep your correspondence private, which I think is the is violated regularly in the United States by intercepting communication. So I think there's a right to privacy, but I think it's a great debate to say what is actually allowed to be kept private.
Very interesting. I did look this up, and apparently he did make a statement that he held the Constitution. This is Clarence Thomas, does not contain a general right to privacy. And I think the word general is important because, as you said, there are specific instances of things that should be kept private. But the invention of Roe v. Wade is a fallacy and has been for all of those years since that was done. Now, before we run out of time, we definitely want to talk about the Fifth Amendment as well, because we have some real issues with, I think, what's governmental abuse of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Many people probably don't know this, but for those of us in the financial services world, we have to, we have to waive our right to the Fifth Amendment. So if they come and they ask us any financial questions about any securities issues in our work, we are not allowed to plead the Fifth. And pleading the Fifth means you're barred from securities exchanges for life.
Mm-hmm.
So, the justification for that is that it's just too important to have an accounting of the financial securities world to allow people to plead the Fifth. And it's written into lots of different self-regulatory agencies.
But how can they circumvent the United States Constitution because they want to?
Yeah, you are allowed to plead the Fifth, but what it means is that you will never have a job again because no one will take you having pled the Fifth. And so it's more the NASDAQ and places like that will just say, look, we're just not going to go there. What's interesting is you're not even allowed to plead the Fifth in IRS proceedings. There's a court case where someone was summoned to the IRS and asked a whole bunch of questions about their ability to pay the tax that they were owed. And they pled the Fifth on all of them, and they were taken back to court, and they had to, question by question, plead the Fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the court said, of all the questions we asked, there's only two of them or three of them that you can actually plead the Fifth on.
Mm.
So you're not allowed to plead the Fifth if I ask you what is your name. That's just not something you're allowed to plead the Fifth. So when Lerner pled the Fifth, she first violated it by having an opening statement, and then she can't plead the Fifth generally. She has to plead the Fifth question by question. And so they should have just kept asking her questions, and she can plead the Fifth on some, and she cannot plead the Fifth on others. And if in her opening statement she had said, I have done nothing wrong, and if that's true, she's not allowed to plead the Fifth on anything because she has already said she's done nothing wrong, so there's nothing that could possibly incriminate her, and therefore she's required to answer every question. And to add one more item of this, if there is truly a right that citizens have the right to a public accounting by government officials of their public service, no public official should be allowed to plead the Fifth. And if they pled the Fifth, I would be happy if they pled the Fifth and were barred from ever being in public service again, just like it is in the financial services world. And I think that's illegitimate. If you've truly done something wrong, you do have a right to not be self-incriminating. But just like in the securities world, with one piece of corroborating evidence, they're allowed to assume the worst by you pleading the Fifth, which is not in most other cases. And so I would say with one piece of corroborating evidence, such as perhaps a signature of hers on some of these documents for the cases, which they have, they're able to say, look, she is clearly in the wrong here, and that's why she's pleading the Fifth. And we can prove it because we have corroborating evidence.
Couple Minutes Left with David Morata, and Robert has been waiting patiently. Hi, Robert. Go right ahead. You're on with David.
Yes, I wonder how Jefferson and, well, let's just say famous historic figures would feel about their letters to their wives having been made available for everyone to read. Your answer off the air.
Robert, thank you. It's a very interesting perspective. David, what do you think?
I'm trying to remember, but I believe that there were these issues as the congressmen had their correspondence intercepted by the British at times. And I believe there were these issues in the Civil War period, and that was one of the grievances that they had against the British government. But I'm trying to remember that, and I don't remember it, so I've probably just gotten all of the details wrong.
So where do we go from here with this? I still think people are frustrated. You know, if we're relying on Robert Hurd or relying on Warner or Kane to go forward with the Gadsden flag and say, I'm going to lead the way here, I think we'll be waiting a long time.
Yeah, and that's why the correct way forward is probably for something that has more weight than state or federal law. It probably has something which is a more fundamental right that we say, look, we've seen enough abuses by the federal government. We've seen them from both Democratic and Republican administrations. We've seen them for years. We've had people promise to have more open administrations, and then they've been worse than their predecessors. And we all thought their predecessors were bad. And so we need to have something that has bigger teeth and better teeth, and we need to have something that's a bigger push. And I think that is a constitutional amendment. Now, the difficulty when you start changing the Constitution is people have all kinds of things they want to write in there as rights, the right to health care. And that's not a right because it imposes on a duty on other people that they don't have. And so it's very careful to try to figure out what is a right and what is not a right to be able to figure out what our unenumerated rights are. But that discussion, I think, is always a positive one to have.
David Morata, thanks so much for joining us today. A very important conversation. It's always good to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
And you can visit David online at moratamoney.com. There's lots of great resources there at that website. I hope you'll take advantage of it.